Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is why I had to come down here this morning, man. This is why I had to miss my cartoons. You call me, you tell me it's important.
We're going home.
Take it, man. Quit leering at me. People are going to think I just broke up with you.
Two fallen angels have just discovered a loophole that can get them back into heaven.
Outstanding work!
All they have to do is get to Red Bank, New Jersey. There's only one problem.
What are you? What do you want with me?
Stop a couple of angels from entering and thus negating all existence. I hate it when people need it spelled out for them.
Now,
I'm to charge you with a holy crusade.
One person has been chosen to stop them, but she won't have to do it alone.
I'm Jay, and this is my head of a life mate, Sam Bob.
You gotta be kidding me.
Prophets.
In a manner of speaking.
What about sex?
No sex.
Guys, I guess just don't follow the sky, you know?
Oh, that sucks!
What are you?
I was the 13th apostle.
You knew Christ.
No. Brother owes me 12 bucks. I thought she looked familiar.
Let me guess. 14th apostle.
I'd like to take us to New Jersey, please.
Jersey's sold out, sir. I suggest you not underestimate the staggering drawing power of the Garden State.
They're successful. You, me, all of this ends in a heartbeat. I feel like Han Solo, you're Chewie, and she's Ben Kenobi.
Prepare to taste God's wrath.
Anyone who isn't dead or from another plane of existence would do well to cover their ears right about now.
The world's against us, dude, I swear to God.
What's he like?
God? He's got a great sense of humor. Take sex, for example.
Sex is a joke in heaven.
The way I understand it, it's mostly a joke down here, too.
Get it?
Who the fuck are you and what the fuck happened to that guy's head? I'm Sebastian.
I suggest you not underestimate the staggering drawing power of the Garden State and show up 2 hours in advance. I'm Andy Schossler.
Go back to your paper route, you mighty duck fucks. I'm Jordan.
Human beings have neither the oral nor the physical...
You can do this.
Psychological capacity to withstand the awesome power of God's true voice. Were you to hear it, your mind would cave in and your heart would explode within your chest. We went through 5 atoms before we figured that one out. And I'm Alex.
Welcome back, Alex.
Welcome back. Welcome back.
And welcome to our review of Dogma. This isn't Black Widow.
No.
It's not. This isn't any new movie.
Good. It's good because this is a good film. I would say it's Kevin Smith's best.
I'm inclined to agree with you. I'd have to maybe give a bit more thought into it, but this face value for me, yeah, you're right.
I would also agree. It's not my personal favorite, but I think it's his best film.
Having also watched Jane Silent Bob Strike Back for next week in preparation for this, I can say that Dogma is his best film.
It's tough for me. Like, I prefer like Clerks 2 over Jane Silent Bob Strike Back, but I don't think Clerks 2 has even lights a candle to this film. But it's fun.
Yeah.
And Clerks 2 was really well made, especially compared to Clerks. But then there's...
It was made, 20 years later?
Yeah, I also think Clerks 2 is funnier. because I think he got better with his writing. Like, I'm not saying Clerks is bad, but it's Clerks is still like the first film, you know?
It positively mentions ass to mouth, which has already got my vote.
So, like, you know, how much better can you get, really?
It's a little known thing, but when film reviewers, they actually, we all have these little journals that we use. And when it comes to recommending or not recommending a film, it actually always comes down to the film's take on ass to mouth.
Exactly.
And it ticks that box.
If you can check that box, you know it's going to be a good film.
So, Alex, how you been?
Busy.
Yeah.
But I'm alive and I'm here.
Well, all right. We've got 7.5 months of catching up to do. So what's your take on all the films we've done?
You've been keeping notes, right?
Yes. No. Yes.
Have you seen Tenet?
Wow. You don't like Alien.
What? Shocking. What a hill. Oh, and I'll have to skip Tenet because I didn't watch it yet.
That's rubbish anyway.
Yeah. It was just confusing. Not confusing in a sense of I didn't get it. Confusing is why do they do this? Like, it really makes you question the choice of the people that decided to turn up. Dogma, though. Guys, I like this movie.
It's fun.
Better than Katma.
I would hate if it was called Katma.
Right.
I mean, it wouldn't make sense for one. Yes. But also, I hate cats.
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad there wasn't a dog joke in it.
Oh, yeah, thank God.
Thank dog.
I'm sure it was tempting.
Yeah.
Why isn't it Godma?
No, Kevin Smith doesn't. He doesn't hold back from, you know, punny jokes, things like that, which can work. They have their place. Just, you know, this was good subject matter. They took it seriously in its own universe, and it worked really well.
Definitely. This was the first of his films I've ever seen. Like, really? Obviously not for this review, but in general. And I don't remember there being any issues with it at the time, which means that you can watch a film that Jay and Silent Bob just rock up in and it's completely normal.
Sure.
Like, you don't need to see them in Clerks to then see them in this and be like, holy shit, it's Jay and Silent Bob. Like, they can just rock up as that in this kind of film.
Case in point, Scream 3.
that's exactly right.
Forgot about that.
But yeah, like 100%. Like, there, I think I was the same. This is probably the first Kevin Smith film that I watched. And I had no idea who Jay and Silent Bob were. And it's good.
Also, they work for the film.
Yeah. I mean, as good as it, as Jay and Silent Bob.
Which is fantastic. Also, I think I saw this film before I saw Indiana Jones. So my origin story for the wrong ticket joke is actually this film.
Ticket.
Yeah. So
it's a good gag.
It is. I can't believe that they stole that off this film. You know, for me personally,
it's done so nicely. You can see that either Smith is paying homage to it or just, you know, using it because it was so iconic. Yeah. You know, and it's done lovingly. Whereas in Strike Back, which we'll talk about next week, of course, it just seems like a bit of a ripoff a lot of the time.
Yep, I will say.
But this whole film, the whole thing feels really sincere.
Mm. Yep.
In all the references, in all the jokes, everything seems sincere.
Yeah.
I think just purely because they were tackling religion, even as farcically as they were.
It's not really a criticism on religion. It's
The priest is.
I mean, the whole point of the film is that there's this loophole, right? And the angels can exploit that. That's what sets everything in motion. That's what the whole climax is about. So if anything, it's a criticism on the dogmatic beliefs of Catholics that make that sort of thing possible. But it's completely fictional to begin with because, as far as we know, nothing like this has ever happened and God's, infallibility has never been challenged in any way. It is a work of fiction. And why you would criticize that as some sort of criticism of religion, I think is a bit silly.
It brings to mind that question. If Jesus could microwave a burrito so hot that Jesus himself couldn't eat it, could it happen? Like, we don't know.
One of George Cullen's stand-up bits was recalling how in Sunday school they would be clever with the priest and do all this sorts of stuff. can God make a rock so heavy that even he can't lift it? Gotcha. That's it.
Alex, how do your uni? Because you were doing education. Did you did theology? Is that right?
In my undergraduate. Yeah.
I'm going to ask a question that you might not know the answer to, but I think you might be the most qualified person at this actual table to ask that question to, unless someone else has taken theology here. I have not.
I'll give it a go.
In an amateur capacity.
Yeah. This whole idea, the idea in this movie about if the church dictates it on earth, the laws have to effectively be superseded and become law in heaven. Which is the basis of this film, saying if the church says you're forgiven, then God is kind of hands tied, must forgive you and let it all happen. Is that actually a thing in Catholicism?
Well, you're forgiven through the priest from God. The priest doesn't forgive you. God's forgiving you through the priest.
Oh no!
For anybody who's confused, the film lays out this situation where two angels have been cast out of heaven by God and said, you can never return.
Never.
You're banished to earth. You're not being sent to hell. You're banished to earth. You can never return to heaven.
Were they banished to Minnesota? No, where was it?
Wisconsin. Yeah. for all just, of human existence.
Just
yeah.
evil.
poor angels.
In 1999, when it's set to be contemporary, there's a church in New Jersey that's part of the Vatican's new Catholicism revival. Where they have blasted through this gimmick, just like indulgences in the 16th century. They've said, okay, your sins are completely absolved if you pass through the arches of this cathedral on this particular day as a part of our revival. Everybody come along and see how, you know, awesome the Vatican is and how forgiving the church is. So the angels get wind of this, and since they can transubstantiate into human form, which demons cannot, angels can. As long as they transubstantiate, they go through the arches as humans.
All their sins are forgiven.
All their sins are forgiven. If they die, having committed no sins after that, they get a ticket to heaven, therefore negating God's decree and undoing the whole of existence because they've proven God to be fallible, which is not the case. God is infallible, creates this paradox, and the whole universe collapses.
Yeah, which is actually
that's quite the premise of the film. It's actually really good. Very much
so. So my question was more so in terms of
and the whole legitimacy for that is that the Bible, especially the Catholic interpretation of it, it says that in one little line of the Bible that Catholics hold true is that whatever you hold true on earth, I will keep true in heaven, which means it's automatic. God has to agree to it because that's what Jesus said was the case.
I'll throw a hypothetical out. This will never happen, but in theory, under this, if the church, let's say the Pope down decreed that, okay, we've decided that murder's fine. We as the Catholic Church agree that
you can be forgiven for it if you just pay this little amount, is sin forgiven.
Which under the realms of this movie would then say if the church has said that that is no longer a sin or is a forgivable sin, for example, then this movie's logic says that then God would have to uphold that because it was done by the
church. Purely hypothetical because the church would never engage in that sort of activity. They would never take bribes and forgive people.
But my question was,
one of the new commandments that Jesus gives is thou shalt not, blessed be the all the, you know, the Beatitudes. The Beatitudes, no? Sermon on the Mount?
I mean, this. I know what these words are, but I don't want to be attitude actually.
Blessed are the cheesemakers. That's all you want to know.
Yeah, yeah. It literally, every line starts with, blessed are the weak of heart, for they will be forgiven.
And, okay.
And it's basically saying, everyone's going to be forgiven and come to heaven.
Everyone. That's me.
As long as you give everything away.
No.
Because you're a greedy fuck if you have any sort of clothes or food or any sort of care for the future. Give everything away now, and when you die, you'll be pure of heart.
Yeah, as long as you seek forgiveness from.
Okay.
It's socialist and it's evil and Jesus.
Jesus was like, commie. Okay. No, so my question is specifically, is that actual part, I mean, you may not know because I don't imagine that you've actually read through the entire Bible through your sides. That'd be crazy. Oh.
Hell no.
The premise of this film being that if a religious law is passed on earth, it must be upheld by God in the afterlife. Is that actually something that's actually written into the Bible? Or is that just, is this the movie kind of waving its hands to me like, it's a religion?
No, it's a verse in the Bible and, you know, depending on which religion religious interpretation you have.
So, in theory, if we have a very progressive pope at the moment, or we did last time, I forget, they all look like the same guy.
Pope Francis.
Yeah. Let's say he said, okay, we've actually decided that under certain circumstances, the church does not oppose like certain abortions because of the risk to the mother. And they will kind of say like, we actually don't care about this issue. Like, we're going to let it be. We don't want to fight it. We're just going to be happy. In theory, that would be okay. Because if it was passed...
Okay with who?
God? That's what I'm saying. Like, if the church said...
The Pope speaks on behalf of God.
Yeah, so if they're saying it, just it's done.
And the Pope's infallible.
Sure. Is that is that also a thing?
That's really? one Catholic doctrine. The Pope is infallible. If
I should become the Pope.
If the current Pope contradicts the previous Pope, he's still correct because the Pope is infallible. And he was correct. The previous Pope was also correct because he was infallible.
Oh, you could be right one day and wrong that's the next day. Same thing. Well, I mean, like, I
as far as the church is concerned, we're not talking about the legality of it. As far as the church and the heavenliness of it is concerned, the Pope is infallible. He can say what he wants and it's true.
And it's like, also true like that the Pope...
Don't kiss my hand during a pandemic because germs are gross. Is you can do a COVID mouth to yourself.
Is it also true that the Pope can step down at any point and have Mike Pence pardon him? Is that a thing that can also occur?
Only if they count all the votes.
Yep. There's like, how many bishops or cardinals do the vote for the Pope?
Four.
I want a recount. I don't trust that one over there.
Two of those votes went missing. I saw the ballots.
Now, the College of Cardinals is like 300 cardinals.
It's funny when there's four of them because it's dangerous. I mean, thank you for the... But it's much funnier when in the middle of the night, a postal truck comes by and drops a giant sack of two votes and they're for a different pope. All right, this movie.
You know, the Pope doesn't have to come from the College of Cardinals. The Pope can be anybody.
He can be the popular.
So, Seb, your dream's not dead.
No,
it's literally not America.
He doesn't have to be.
It's not the USA.
What?
The Pope doesn't have to be a priest or have been a priest.
Okay.
Anybody can theoretically be elected Pope. It's just that traditionally the cardinals elect one of their own.
You don't.
Sebastian 2022.
You guys, firstly, Jordan predicting the death of the Pope.
He can abdicate.
Yeah, he can.
Which Benedict 17 did.
Is he still alive?
Yeah.
He's Ratzinger,
yeah.
Still
yeah,
very, very sick.
Was he the good one?
No.
Was it Pope Francis?
No, John Paul II was the...
No, very recently, within like the last three popes, there was one that was a bit more progressive than the rest.
Yeah, John Paul II.
The current one?
Isn't he a
Benedict
Beetle?
17 took over John Paul II.
The current pope be like, yo, the gays are all right.
Is that what the current one did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He's Francis the First.
Frankie. Oh, Francis the First is the current pope?
Yes.
Oh, he's the
Argentinian.
He's the straight edge one, isn't he?
Straight edge.
that was entirely a joke, but I also kind of assume yes.
I think he drinks wine every Sunday.
No, it doesn't count as wine.
It's not wine, it's the blood of Christ.
Yeah, it's fine.
I'm not going to argue that. It's wine that symbolizes, but yes.
While we're doing this movie and attacking all things religion, no, we're not. I have to ask.
I think
though,
it's in the spirit of the film.
And I don't direct this to this corner of the table because I think you can specialize this.
Yeah, Andy, you're talking too much.
No. It was purely in going to church, can vegans partake in the blood of Christ? So I throw it to our vegan correspondent, Jordan, and our Catholic correspondent, Alex.
I believe red wine is largely vegan friendly, so I'm going to go yes.
Well, it's the blood of Christ, Jordan.
Yeah, but that's... God's not an animal, Seb.
Is cannibalism a loophole?
Yeah, I'm cool with it.
Okay. How does the church feel about cannibalism?
I think it's strongly frowned upon.
Shocked.
Don't know if it's strictly forbidden, but I know they frown upon it.
Is there somewhere in that book where it says no to the eating of other people?
You can't kill them, but I suppose if you just find them.
Yeah, I mean, if I just stumble upon it, like if I'm in need of sustenance.
Look,
it's okay to take man meat into the mouth, providing you chew.
Okay.
But not the penis.
Just so we're clear.
Providing you chew.
Yeah.
I think you've got to look at it as like, do you see them as an equal or are they lesser than you? Because if they're lesser than you, then it's not cannibalism.
Every single person on this earth is lesser than
you. Then it's not cannibalism. That's words of Hannibal, and I believe he was a practicing Roman Catholic.
Hey, how about some facts?
Please.
Anything to take me off the Catholic watch list by this point?
It's a well-liked film, 7.3 on IMDb. Rotten Tomatoes has a 67% critical, 85% audience, which averages out to about 7.5, which is about right.
Yep,
check that it seems out. About right.
A bit low for what I would have thought, but I thought this film would have aged better in that sense.
It still holds up.
Yeah,
I thought so.
No, I mean, like, I thought over time this film would have gone up in score. I mean, just from rewatches, people have been like, "Oh, it's actually it's quite good."
Well, it that depends on how everything's weighted, because it didn't do so well at the box office.
His like films don't really.
That's standard Kevin Fair.
It was successful in its own right.
It did roughly $30 million.
$30 million, yeah.
Is that and made that's or like
that's, Kev, a, that's Kevin's ceiling. Yeah, like $30 million.
That's the worldwide gross off a budget of 10.
Okay.
But it's since become a bit of a cult classic.
Yeah,
and I think anybody
it's found
who was
its home.
Anybody who was a teen in
just
the,
like Catholicism.
In the late 90s and early 2000s, I think it has this on their radar as, oh yeah, Dogma, yeah. I know that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, that's how like I found the movie. I found like a copy of Mallrats in my brother's room one day.
Oh yeah.
And so like I watched that and I was like, this is great. So I got onto Google, like found all the other movies, went to my local Blockbuster.
Yep.
Oh wow. Yeah. Rented the whole catalog.
My goodness. See,
I was shocked because I thought I owned this movie. So I went down to my little DVD cabinet where I've got like 20 movies that I haven't thrown out since. And I'm like, Clerks, Clerks 2, Jane, Silent Bob. Oh.
No
Dogma.
I did the same. I like recently like threw out most of my physical media, but like all of those movies, I was like, nah, I'm going to keep those. They have a special place in my heart. I got to keep those ones.
I have three copies of John Carpenter's The Thing. I don't know why.
Are they all the same?
I think one of them has two discs in it.
Ooh.
Like none of them are the new version and none of them are the original version. They're just three copies of the exact same version of this film that exists three times. Like I have the capacity to own the original John Carpenter's and the prequel sequel thing, but I don't. Just, which I think is, I mean, in reality, a really good choice by me.
I mean, I could totally help you with that. I could burn them all for you.
No, why would you? Oh, that's right. You guys weren't. I'm not sure if you were here for the show.
I wasn't, no, but The Thing is good.
But yeah, Alex hated it.
Yeah. You're wrong.
Yeah, you know, it's no. This is one of those hills I'll choose to die upon.
I only saw it for the first time a few years ago, and it's fantastic.
Yeah.
This
one. Nah, it doesn't matter. So, William Donahue of the Catholic League publicly protested this film for 6 months before he requested a private screening with Kevin Smith to talk about it seriously. And Smith responded, so what have you been doing for the last 6 months?
When I think about this actual movie, and you're right when you say it's not an attack on the church at all.
It really isn't.
It's not. In fact, it's literally about an out-of-faith Catholic coming back to the church.
Like, if anything
yeah. This film literally, in its narrative, says, yeah, God is real.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's actually pro-religion.
And it doesn't even challenge the validity of the Catholic interpretation of what's going on. God's kind of like, yeah, whatever. It's all true. That's your rules, and your rules say that I have to abide by that, and okay. So let's not undo the universe and actually find a way to make this happen. Yeah.
On face value.
Like, imagine getting death threats for a movie that literally has a rubber poop monster in it. Like,
yeah.
Come on, chill out, guys.
I suppose on face value, if I told you, hi, I'm Kevin Smith, the creator of Clerks, and I'm making a movie about a lady that works in an abortion clinic tackling the Catholic Church, that sounds a lot worse than what the actual film is. But that's as far, I think just like literally listing that out.
Yeah.
But when you actually watch but the it's film, not, it's not.
No. And she's not attacking the Catholic Church at all.
She's defending it.
In fact,
really,
she goes to the cardinal and says, hey, this is the situation. Please don't hold your event because it's kind of serious. And he goes, I don't believe you because that sounds so far-fetched, you know.
And to be fair, they put up a terrible case in that scene. It wasn't even like they hit him with a legitimate argument and he was just like, no, hubris, no.
No, they just kind of
he's just like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Yeah. So Alan Rickman was asked to play Metatron because Kevin Smith got the word that he was a fan of Chasing Amy. He only had two questions. Would Smith stay faithful to the script? And were the angel wings real or CGI?
Huh.
Did he? And yeah, I'm guessing
I think they were real.
His were real. The only, I think there were fake ones at the end when Ben Affleck was flying.
Yeah, but the whole flying was CGI as well. That wasn't.
Think so, yeah.
Oh, that looked so real to me.
I mean, God that he is, Ben Affleck can descend from the heavens at any given time. So.
Well, true.
I think this is my favorite Matt Damon role, by the way.
Oh, he's so good.
Yeah. He's good in this film. I don't normally like him because he's, you know, white bread Matt Damon, but
he's good in films.
He's not a bad actor. He just has a really boring aura for me. Like, I just, I'm never interested in seeing him, but he was good in this film.
Just depends on what you're seeing him. Like, every time I've seen him in sci-fi, he's good. Like, The Martian and Elysium.
I quite liked. The Martian was really good.
I've actually not seen either of those. Yeah. And
They're good. They're good.
Maybe we can do them next year. Maybe.
Maybe. Jason Mewes memorized the entire script before rehearsals
That's a great story.
So that he didn't anger Rickman and because Smith asked him to bring his A game.
Yeah.
This is one of those cool pet projects of Smith to try and get Jason Mewes to be less of a stoner, I think.
Yeah.
Legitimately.
And they kept on fighting about that later on. There's more trivia about that next week.
Ooh, can't wait.
It got a bit nasty for a while.
Yeah.
This was written before Clerks, which was 94,
I think,
or so. Yeah. But Smith shelved it just so he could do it justice when he was a better filmmaker and when he could do the visual effects.
More money.
As well, yeah. Or, you know, at least get more from the studio to do it properly.
I don't know if this is in the trivia noted, but I only noticed it this time because I was like paying attention for the review. All the angels wear hoodies in this film. Is that
now?
I'm assuming that's on purpose.
They're all dressed the same in hoodies because the idea was that the hoods down on the back would symbolize their halos.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
The only one that wasn't wearing a hoodie was Serendipity, but she was a human by that stage. I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that checks out in terms of like the internal logic. If I'd seen another demon wearing a hat, I would have just sealed it for me that they demons wear hats and angels wear hoodies.
That's a good example of the director paying attention to the detail of something that isn't critical to it, but when somebody does spot it, they go, hold on, that actually makes a lot of sense. And visually, subconsciously, it probably does cue in as well without you really being aware of it. You know?
It must have been on purpose because at first...
Absolutely it was. So Jason Lee played Azrael, but only because... Loki had been written for him, but he couldn't do it because of some scheduling conflicts, so he had to take a lower role, or a smaller role, not a lower role, I should say, because Azrael is kind of key to the whole movie as well. Care to take a guess at who was considered for Azrael, or should I just tell you?
Well, give me a hint. I love these games.
Bill Murray.
Okay. Was it...
Could you guess the other two I have on my list based off that?
Dan Aykroyd?
No. If only. Wrong way. Go the other way. John Travolta.
Howard Ramis is my other direction.
No, it was Bill Murray and John Travolta. Adam Sandler.
I actually did read that. I just blocked it from my mind. But yeah.
Adam Sandler kind of verbally agreed to do it, but backed out to do instead Big Daddy. Which good I think choice. Was a better film for him.
Yeah, that's a good choice.
Yeah.
And well, you get to star in it.
It's funny to think about the what ifs because after you see it, you can't really picture anybody else in the role.
Yeah.
And seeing Adam Sandler do a role that Jason Lee nailed, I can't imagine him doing it justice.
Me either, actually.
what else Adam Jason Sandler's Lee? Fine. And at the time, he was fine. Like,
apart
Happy Gilmore
James
was...
Bob Strikes Back and
not a lot of, like, bigger movie roles, hey.
Is he the My Name Is Earl guy?
Yeah.
Is
that like, he didn't really find his niche until that, I guess.
He looks so fucking similar to Ryan Reynolds in this film.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he?
General. You think so?
I think that they, like...
Yeah. A thin
they,
Ryan Reynolds,
if you put them
yeah.
as brothers in a film, yeah. I wouldn't bat an eye. I'd be like, wow, I can't believe they found a second Ryan Reynolds. I have a question about the angels' names. So we got Bartleby. That sounds like an angel name. Loki, obviously, we all know like Norse mythology. Did they just pick a random name and they didn't go with like a Catholic religious name? Or is it also one that's been reused within Catholicism? Because it's definitely, it's a Nordic name.
As far as I know, angels aren't identified specifically in the Bible until it's many, many revisions later. Like in the original scripts, I don't think they had angel names.
Oh, I was just curious about that because obviously, I mean, we all know the Thor movies, but even before, I mean, other movies use Loki as well. Like Loki's the fucking god from The Mask as well. Like,
I mean, so much of religion is just theology that's been packed up over time. That's just become known as the theology. There's no real basis for it other than it's just been included and people have known about it for so long.
Okay. That's why I was just curious if it was any, like, at least known references to it, because I know Bartleby, like that one, even if it's not an angel name, it sounds like an angel name because it's like it's from the right fucking place in the world for that title. But anyway, it's fine. I was just more curious.
I mean, all the names tend to be quite Jewish in origin anyway.
Yeah.
Loki, high key, yeah.
Loki's not, you know, a ridiculous sort of name for that time. And who knows, the Norse mythology may have taken it on. Or maybe it's just coincidental that it's... That it's also
maybe. Okay, all good. I'll just
it's only two syllables, low key.
No, stolen it from Zeus. Oh. Wait, that's the wrong one again too.
The Buddy Christ statue stands today at the Jay and Silent Bob's secret stash,
that's true.
Which is Smith's comic book shop in Red Bank, New Jersey. And you can buy replicas of it, but the real one is at the comic book shop.
I want this.
Bethany was originally cast as Alanis Morissette.
Okay.
Right? And because Smith found it so hard to work with Linda Fiorentino, he wished he had cast Jean Garofalo, who plays her best friend, as Bethany. Alanis Morissette was on tour at the time, so she couldn't accept the role, but it was sort of Kevin Smith wanted her for it, and ended up getting her as God.
For God, yeah.
Originally, Smith wanted Gillian Anderson.
Oh, that would be cool.
The X-Files to play Bethany. I don't know why that never happened, but that's certainly who Kevin Smith had in mind.
Probably still would have been peak X-Files like filming by that point, wouldn't it? Or was that over by then?
No, X-Files would have been...
Because that didn't finish till like 2000 or something, right?
Yeah, and this was 99.
Yeah.
So it would have been right up at the end in the last couple of seasons. Yeah.
I didn't realize until I looked it up, the lady that played Bethany was the female lead from Men in Black.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was watching it and like, she looks really familiar, but I've seen this film so many times. Mm. So I was like, I'm just remembering the same film. But no.
And Kevin Smith apparently had quite a difficult time working with her.
Ah, which is good though.
Yeah. So he wanted Gillian Anderson. When she said no, he or couldn't do it. Then he wanted Alanis Morissette, who also couldn't do it. But she could do a smaller role, so he
put her as God.
Put her as God. But he had originally written God for Holly Hunter.
Oh, okay. Mm. Interesting.
Who couldn't do it.
Of course.
And then Emma Thompson was going to do God, which I think could have worked really well, especially with Alan Rickman being the sidekick to God. But she got pregnant and backed out because of that. And she gave birth around the time the film premiered.
I'm happy with how it ended up. I liked the lead as Bethany, and you know, Alanis Morissette rocked up for all of 60 seconds.
Yeah,
and she's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah,
it's just being very doesn't say a word. It's just very eccentric.
Her as God trying to do a handstand and falling over is actually one of my favorite things. It's really cute. Yeah,
and George Carlin,
he's fucking great in this film.
He's so good. He's so good.
So good in general, but very good in this film.
He had a wedding band that he didn't want to take off because he lost his wife quite recently when the film was being made. So he wore a Band-Aid over it, which kind of skin-coloured and so on, which worked quite well. Turns out he didn't have to because a lot of actual Catholic clergy wear wedding bands to symbolise their marriage to the church.
Oh, okay.
And if he was a Protestant, so he would be married anyway, right?
So all that effort, all that expense of a Band-Aid for nothing.
Oh. Hey? There goes the entire budget.
On a Kevin Smith film? You have to take that into account. And the working title of the film, Bear Claw.
Oh,
okay. Huh.
I don't see the relationship to it. No, I don't understand the reference. But
maybe in the original version, God would like donuts and not ski. No. That could work.
That could have worked. That's it. End of trivia.
End of trivia?
Yeah.
Get into the film?
No, the rest of it is all references and stuff that's in the film.
Yep. Sweet.
I didn't get trivia about, you know, things that are in the film, like plot points and things like that. Just watch the film. That's not trivia. That's in the film.
All right. I guess we'll take it from the top then. So effectively, yeah, the premise is that God was visiting Earth in the body of, was he a homeless man, I guess? Because he didn't have any ID on him was one of the key points there.
I guess it would have been, yeah.
Yeah. So,
well, he's not homeless.
Well, he didn't have ID. He was like a John.
Yeah, he's a John. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he may be homeless, maybe just person who left his wallet at home.
There you go, Seb. No, you're projecting. You're putting your own judgments onto this poor man, calling him homeless straight away. He couldn't be an out of work guy. He couldn't just be some guy who left his ID at home in his mansion. You know, and also left his car keys there, and you know everybody he knows.
You don't need your ID to play skee ball.
I'm just saying. He was on. It was like on TV, which yeah, is the main
he must be homeless. That's exactly right because he doesn't have any ID and he's an old white guy.
Well, he was on TV. He's beaten up. And no one came
probably
to
because
find
he
him.
Was looking for drugs, right? And then he went for his wallet and oh no, guys, I've left my wallet at home with all my ID, so I can't even, you know, show you who I am and you know prove my address to you so you can come and collect it there.
He was on TV say, and his
screw
family
you,
didn't
homeless
come
old
for him.
Man. I'm not giving you any drugs to feed your habit.
So this homeless man that God was possessing, God was there to play skee ball.
He loves skee ball.
Which is that game where you roll the ball up and it hits the thing and bounces and you got to try to land
with
it.
With
the
rings? With yeah. Is that the game? The okay.
Anyway, that's he fun. Gets jumped by three bad boys with hockey sticks.
Oh, and rollerblades.
Yeah. And they just beat the shit out of him. And that's the beginning of the film. The end. So that was God getting beaten into a coma by three demons.
Very clever plan.
Yes.
Which we find out later is the plan, but a very clever plan.
So then we go to Bethany, who works at an abortion. Have I jumped ahead? Oh, no. No, sorry. We go to Matt and
Apple. Oh, yeah, that's best.
So, yeah, we have our two main sort of villains, for lack of a better description, in the film, played by Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. They're two angels.
Anti-protagonists.
Like, it's hard because one of them's the bad guy for half the film, and the other guy's the bad guy for the other half of the film, but really they were all under the demon who...
They're not bad guys. They want to exploit this thing to go home. Their motivation is to go home.
Oh, no, Affleck changes his mind at the end, though.
Yeah. He's like, but at the start, their motivation is to go home.
Yeah. So they were angels that we said before. They were kicked out of heaven.
Very importantly, they were angels who used to... Well, Loki, anyway, specifically, used to be God's wrath.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before God had a change of heart and... maybe we'll undo the last 800 years of history. Forget about that. Peaches and sunshine, everybody.
Yep. So yeah, Loki was effectively death.
The angel,
I guess. Yeah. 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 And Bartleby, which is Ben Affleck's character, he was just referred to as a watcher. So his whole shtick of this entire film is he just knows everything about someone by looking at them, which is a funny point that he doesn't use in a very important scene later. But he was drunk. No, she was. No, he was drunk.
He can't be drunk.
They've both been drinking.
They're not allowed to drink, but he was on Earth, so we think he was doing it. Because there was all those beer bottles.
That was her drinking.
Oh my God.
He wasn't drinking.
Interesting. Okay.
He was pretending to drink, but he wasn't drinking.
Matt Damon was also drunk in that scene. I think they can drink.
No.
They just don't because they were told not to.
No. It wasn't a commandment. God forbade it, as in they can't imbibe the, like, you know, does something to them.
I want to see that. Okay.
It's not a request. It's a physical incapability of drinking.
So they get a letter that lets them know that
the loophole is that they can get the taste of it.
Why would you want the taste of it? And just the taste of alcohol is the worst part of alcohol.
Some, you know, port tastes nice.
Yeah, okay,
wines taste nice.
But I'm telling you, you can name a
beer tastes nice.
You can name a billion drinks, and I'm telling you, Great Fanta is better. If Great Fanta could get me drunk, wow.
Just add some vodka to that.
Does it taste like vodka?
No. How much vodka are you putting into your drink?
An appropriate amount.
5 to 1, Sam. 5 to 1.
Okay. So they get a letter that says, effectively, there's this church that's put this magical little arch in that anyone that passes under it gets all their sins absolved. And they work out that if they were to do that, turn back to human and die, or to go human, then do that and die.
They get to heaven and there's not a damn thing God can do about it.
Because God doesn't want them there anymore, but technically if they haven't sinned and they die as humans, that's the rules. They get to go in. So then they go to start heading off to New Jersey to do this whole thing. That's their plan. At this stage, they don't know that this is a bad thing. They think it's just, oh, we get in and that's awesome. Like the family's back, you know?
Yeah, Barnaby's so blinded by being able to go home after all this time That's all he cares about. He's not thinking out the situation. It's just about going home.
Yeah, exactly. So currently, they're being set up as the bad guys, but they're not actually. There's no real malice there. Like they
anti-heroes, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, Loki. I'm not going to go through into every single scene with them, but Loki throughout this thing on their journey from wherever they were to was it Michigan? No.
They're in Wisconsin.
Milwaukee.
Yeah.
They're going to New Jersey.
Yeah. So from there to New Jersey, they will make a couple of different stop-offs where to get back in God's good books, he wants to
carry out some rightful justice.
Yeah, he wants to effectively kill some sinners.
Yeah. If he had a dick, he would fuck, but not having one, he can do the next best thing, and that's kill a bunch of people. Yep.
So I won't go to every individual scene there, but they do that on their way through.
They basically execute the whole of the movies, the restaurant franchise.
About time.
Their executive board.
Yeah. Oh, so I
read.
That's
a great scene.
To jump ahead to that scene, which I did like as well, Jordan, I really did like. I was reading as well. Apparently, all the guys in that scene were all stunt actors because they were going to do like a John Woo style like fight scene.
Okay.
But I can't remember the reason, but Kevin Smith decided, oh, probably not.
And then he did that really tense scene instead.
Just sit there and be called a pedophile. Yeah. That'll be your stunt. Which, to be fair, was a really good scene.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
It was the right kind of tense. Yeah. But he did actually hire a bunch of stunt actors to do like a full fucking action
How
scene.
About that?
Just like doesn't suit. So yeah, while this is all happening and they're going their thing, our lead Bethany is visited by Metatron. So this is Alan Rickman's character. Effectively, Metatron is the voice of God because, as we learn in this film, God can't speak without destroying humans. Because
she's introduced as a worker at an abortion clinic who has lost her faith.
Yes.
Yeah.
So God's dead, as far as she's concerned.
Now the reason that is, which comes sort of back throughout the film, is her husband ended up leaving her because she had some sort of illness which rendered her barren, so unable to produce a child. Husband wanted a kid and decided no thanks and left. So that whole situation just led her to giving up on God, which I mean, for the narrative, makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. So they go to the abortion clinic as like flipping the bird, which is great. All right, so she's visited by Metatron, who's this angel, and eventually tells her, "Hey, so we need you to go on a crusade, not a pilgrimage, a crusade to stop these angels from doing this thing because, like we said in the trivia, effectively, if they get into heaven, despite God saying you're not allowed here, they've proven God wrong. Within the narrative of this film, God is an infallible being. To make God have made a mistake is to effectively undo his will, undo his power. And effectively, if God says black is black and white is white, and you've proven that white is black, he's wrong and the entire universe unravels. So you have-
Because that's the very first premise that it's the whole universe is built on.
Correct. So if God's proven to be wrong, the thing that's holding everything together no longer exists, which it's an interesting narrative. I'm phrasing it a little bit more wordily than it needs to be. It's a bit more simple than I'm saying. So it sounds maybe a bit more complex than it actually is, but I like it as a premise.
In its own internal logic, it's an actual stake.
Yeah.
Because the universe is the whole of existence is at stake.
Yeah. So they need, the angels don't know about this at the moment. So Ben Affleck and Matt Damon's character don't actually understand or know that if they were to prove God wrong, existence would come undone. They just think they get to go home. So she's told, go out there, stop these angels. You're going to meet some prophets along the way. They'll identify themselves as one. One of the best lines in the film, there's two prophets. The one that talks, and he will. And the other one. Anyway, and does he also tell them that she'll be joined by an apostle?
Or no, Rufus just comes along, I think.
Okay. So,
because God's not in heaven, nobody really knows what's going on, and Metatron's been trying to play it cool, but he's terrified as well.
Perfect. So she sort of
God, of course, is in incapacitated in this comatose body.
They don't know where he is.
Nobody can identify, and since he's not dead, you can't get back into heaven until he dies. So, a very clever plan on Azrael's part.
That's good. So she doesn't really love this idea, so she kind of ignores it, and she gets jumped by the three demons with the hockey sticks.
Yes.
And Jay and Silent Bob, just passing by, see a woman being attacked by three kids, and they just beat the shit out of these kids, and they save her.
On their way to the non-existent Shermer, Illinois.
And they freaking, the reason they were there, so she was outside work, is they figure that an abortion clinic's a really good location to meet loose women.
You know they put out.
Well, we know they do. It's a scientific fact. Through this, she identifies, because of something that Jay says, that, oh, crap.
They say something. They say prophets. Prophets with an eye,
yeah,
and Metatron's voice in a in a head who says prophets, and oh, okay, I guess these guys are them.
So she feels, oh, guess fuck it, whatever. She ends up teaming up with these guys, and they're traveling to New Jersey anyway, which is where she needs to go.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and she heads there, and they at one point Rufus, who's the 13th apostle, played by Chris Rock, who's fucking great in this film.
Oh, so good,
yeah.
He rocks up as well, and he's there to help out.
Yeah, the line, you know, Jesus, yeah, he owes me $12, was originally, yes, I saw him naked. And
this is much better.
Chris Rock ad-libbed, of course. Yeah, he owes me $12. Which, yeah, it's much better. It is better.
Yeah, the sigh of relief we all made during the intro while it was playing, that he goes, the brother owes me $12. Because he does not use the word brother in the film. Which is what took it out of my quote reel for what I was going to enter with. Because, like, what do I
repeat? Does he use Mr.? Mr. Jesus owes me $12. No,
do you actually not remember? Is this a bit? Because it's a bit. Okay, it is a bit. It's not a bit. It is a bit. He uses the N word, Andrew. One that
what
I can't N-word?
Say. Necromancy.
Yes, that necromancer, which actually is not the most obscene thing to call Jesus with that whole Lazarus situation. That's true. I'm going to turn to my religion. Religious correspondent. Is that right? Did Jesus raise Lazarus?
Jesus couldn't have done it unless Lazarus really wanted to come back from the dead.
He did, because he was dead.
That's exactly right, yeah. He drew his power from Lazarus. And, yeah.
Jesus rose him, or did Lazarus rise himself? I literally can't remember if the story was the Jesus.
Lazarus willed it so much. That
but he was dead.
Was he?
Yeah, but he really just, wanted to say.
Maybe he was just really asleep and they couldn't wake him. Like,
okay.
So Rufus joins the gang. Their car is out of commission because Jay
doesn't have gears.
Didn't realize. Great scene. So the car is fried. They end up catching a train that Bartleby and Loki happen to be on also.
So the important part for this is Chris Rock's character's gone to have a nap because he's the only one that would recognize who they were.
Because he's lounging in heaven.
Yep. And they don't know. The angels didn't even know that. Oh yeah, sorry. Bethany's character is referred to as the last Zion on this film, mm-hmm. which is a thing you may have recognized from the Da Vinci Code, right?
Or the Matrix films. Yep.
Effectively, she's the last living descendant of Christ.
Yeah,
yeah. Because while
some
she's
some great 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 niece. Of,
yeah, yeah. So she's not directly from Christ's like,
but from Mary but and
from
Joseph.
Mary's, yeah, yeah. So they still don't really explain why she was the one that had to be sent to do this mission. She actually didn't do anything like Zion-y.
She's martyred at the end.
I could have been martyred. Like that could have been me. If you swapped me for Bethany, the only difference would have been to be like,
but that's it. The reason is because she's, you know, related to Christ and she's the only person who is.
Okay.
So
except for the one from the Da Vinci Code.
Yeah. I mean, apart from picking somebody, you know, righteous at random or the most righteous person, that's the next best thing, you know, and it's easy. Yeah, she's related to Christ. That's why she's chosen. Fine.
It
could be anyone. You're right. There's no particular reason why it had to be her specifically because she's not particularly faithful, not particularly, righteous. She's not, you know, giving away all this stuff. She's not feeding kids in the street, you know.
But two for one, you get her faith back and also through the means of the story, allow her to bear a child, which means the lineage.
Yeah, all that mysterious ways bullshit. And,
as opposed to just Metatron rocking up with that cardinal. I mean, like, close the church.
Yeah, yeah, done.
The whole movie done.
There's the whole metaphor of her life relating to Jesus' life, though.
Yeah.
Like an angel rocking up at like when Jesus was 12 and being like, hey, you're actually God. Good luck. You're going to die. Like,
yep.
Work it out.
Like, see you in 12 years. Yeah.
All jokes aside.
Okay.
The whole scene with Metatron is like, I hate spilling things out for people. You know, he had the exact same talk with Jesus. okay. So they're on the train and they just happen to meet up because Jan, Silent Bob find these two cool looking dudes that look like they're from a Miramax film decide to have a chat with them. So they're having a chat with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck's characters. Bethany joins them. She gets pretty drunk and she's having a one-on-one with Ben Affleck's character. And in that, becoming a bit of a D&M, if you will. And she goes into this whole stupid scenario that she's been put into without realizing that she's now telling Ben Affleck's character, I've been sent to stop these angels. And she actually directly says, because he raised the issue of you have to kill them. And she's like, I don't think I have to kill them. I just need to stop them. Like she's actually saying like, yeah. I don't want to kill them. I don't think I have to. I think we can do this through other means, but I have to stop them. But Ben Affleck's character hearing that the heavens have sent a fucking crusader to stop them has really upset him. So even though he now understands that the reason they're doing it is to stop existence from coming undone, he's kind of just really betrayed and sort of upset about this all, which then eventually brings his heel turn in, because the entire time up till now, Matt Damon's character has been like the righteous murderer going through killing all the sinners. Like he's been the really violent one and Affleck's just been sort of there. And this is the scene where they sort of swap places, where Matt Damon's character's like, oh, actually things are pretty okay. I'm pretty chill now. Like I'm having a good time.
Yeah.
And Affleck's character's like, oh, I need to destroy everything. So this is kind of the point of the film where Affleck turns into a proper antagonist as opposed to just sort of there for the ride.
Yeah, because he was made first before humans and he gets jack all.
His life was
service
determined to be service, whereas humans who came afterwards get a choice and that's somehow okay and he doesn't get a choice yet.
And constant forgiveness. Yeah. Like they can fuck up millions of times as long as they seek to repent, they get it back. Whereas I made one mistake and I'm gone forever.
Yeah.
And I fully justified bad guy. I get it. No part of me questions from when he starts to when he ends, why he got there. Yeah. Actually a really well-written villain because...
So that's the point where he doubles down and fuck this. I'm not going to apologize for doing something that everybody else, gets a free pass on. Mm-hmm.
And as for Azrael, like having lived in hell and escaped to Earth, like, yeah, he wants everything to be undone because he doesn't want to go back.
Yeah, so Azrael's story is really interesting. So we jumped ahead a little bit because I think I missed Selma Hayek rocking up into this film as serendipity.
If you haven't seen Dogma, it's a nice treat.
Yeah.
I mean, Selma Hayek.
Pooh Monster, Train.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Who doesn't want to see Selma Hayek covered in poo? Hey?
So, yeah, they go to a strip club and there's a serendipity is there. She's an ex-angel who left willingly, wasn't kicked out of heaven, just said to God, I want to try to create for myself because she was a muse who inspired other people. So she came down to Earth and has been struggling with
that. Immediately had writer's block.
Help create the 19 or the 20 top grossing films of all time.
The one that she didn't do was Home Alone.
Yeah.
But everything else is her.
Yeah.
So there's another scene later on where we have Azrael kind of confronting the team while the angels are pretty much at the church about to initiate their master plan. And that's when he does his sort of reveal of what he did and why he's done it. And they've got,
well, he's trapped Bethany and everybody there so that they can't stop the angel from happening. And yeah.
And Azrael's story is good. So effectively there was, when Lucifer rose up against God and there was a bit of a battle where, it was a civil war, the parties split and everything went there. Azrael didn't pick a side. He just stayed in the middle.
Pacifist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he phrases it as pacifist. They phrase it as you were just waiting to see who won. So after God won and everything was all settled, as punishment, God sent all the angels that sided Lucifer to hell, but also the ones that didn't pick a side down to hell because they didn't side with God. So his gripe is that he was being punished for nothing because he's like, I didn't turn against God. I just didn't want to fight. Mm-hmm. But he got sent to hell because he was a fence sitter effectively. And that's his, gripe for like a better word. Which makes sense once again. I get why.
And as a demon, he can't exploit this loophole because he can't transubstantiate to human.
Mm, right.
So the next best thing he has is to stop hell from existing.
Well, that's the thing. He says, like, which, hell is so bad, I would rather never exist, like not exist, than actually go back there. So apparently hell's very bad.
Yeah.
We didn't know that.
So I've been told.
Yeah.
Apparently there's multiple levels.
Yeah, yeah. And he's...
Everybody says it's dark, but you think with all the fire down there, it would actually be quite well lit.
Do you reckon it's red fire? I always imagine red fire, but there's hotter fire. There's different colors.
White.
Well, that would be annoying for your eyes.
You've got Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, which interprets hell as a very, very red, hot place.
Yeah.
But do you know what the deepest circle of hell is reserved for?
Betrayers and mutineer.
Thank you.
Oh, I was going to say people that don't toast their subs.
That too.
That was legit.
That's the second lowest level.
Yeah. Fresh or toasted? No, I want a good one, please. Toast that.
Make it good.
Who toasts their subs?
Oh, this is going to be fun when you die.
Guess where you're heading.
Yeah, let me have some really crunchy bread.
If the bread was any good to begin with, you wouldn't have to toast it. But Subway bread hasn't been good for a long time.
It's fine.
Have you seen when they go to make it? It looks like they get like a slug that is like squish out. And then obviously they bake it and it expands, but it's just like, it looks like they just take like a bread shaped, a bread colored turd in the middle of the tray.
I stopped enjoying Subway when the V cut turned into a traditional cut.
The what cut? Sorry?
Well, the way they do a sub now, yeah, right, is where they cut the bun, mm-hmm, down the side of it lengthways, mm-hmm, right? Where they used to cut a V shape out of the top of it.
As in like, so they keep it as one piece of bread, do you mean, as opposed to two pieces of bread?
Yeah, so you had a bottom piece and then you had a V-shaped piece that sort of went in the top. So everything would sort of sit in this bread trough.
Okay.
Right, and then you had the V-shape, and that's how Subways used to be done. And then that became a traditional cut that you had to ask for, especially when they moved to the slice it down the side, like a sandwich thing.
I've never known.
I know. Yeah. I'm showing my age here.
How old are you? When can I obtain this traditional cut? Give me a year.
You can ask. Oh God, I was at university, so at least 2001. Okay. Was the last time I remember that where this was normal.
I feel like
normal.
I didn't begin indulging in Subway until like the mid-2000s.
So what do I ask for this magical old cut now?
It's the traditional cut.
So I ask for a traditional cut?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the standard they give us now is a V cut?
No. No. The standard now is like a sandwich where you cut the bun in half.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas the traditional cut, they would lay the thing down and out of the top of it, they would cut out, you know, a sort of V, in cross section, it's a V shape.
I'm imagining a hot dog bun.
Sort of, yeah. It's cut down the top, but it's not cut down the top. They actually cut a V out of the top. So you're left with like this bread trough, this bread bowl.
So what do they do with the bread that they cut out? Just throw it in the fucking trash?
No, that sits on top of everything, sort of pressing it. I mean, it's, you know, it's soft bread. It used to be soft bread.
Okay.
You know, now it's kind of stale.
Yeah. Oh, which, I get it now. Okay, so
I don't get it. I feel
a
like
a triangle out.
Yeah, it's
the top.
It kind of where you put the triangle when it's done
back on top.
You put the food in there. Yeah. The subs in there.
Yeah, and everything. It doesn't fit back to be, you know, a perfect, you know, bread aligned.
I need to visualize, you know, this.
Joinery. It's elevated. It's just sitting on top of all the toppings.
How did they put the cheese in?
Yes.
How do they put the cheese in?
So they've cut a V.
Oh, okay.
And they're just gonna, like, yeah, they're just jamming stuff into that gap.
I get it.
Okay.
The point is, it used to be more like a hot dog. That's probably a good comparison.
So it's on the side, like Jordan's picture?
That is now called the traditional cut. That used to be what Subway sandwiches came like. Now you have to ask for that specifically.
And they know what you're asking for. If I go in and say, I want the traditional cut.
Yeah.
They'll know what I'm saying.
Of course they will.
What are you, like 50?
You can still order stuff.
It's basically like having a hot dog bun, but you put a lid on it.
You can still order sandwiches that haven't been on the menu for decades. Okay. And Subway artists are required, you know what you're talking about. Or at least somebody there will, because they're required to be able to give you this. It's not ordering off menu. It's ordering, you know, I guess, what's the word for it? Discontinued menu items. You can still order them and they still serve it to you.
You can't get a honey oat loaf though.
And that's another reason why you shouldn't have Subway.
This is what they said would happen if they left Rose, guys.
Yeah.
They said they'll take our fucking honey loaf.
And the V cut, it's all gone. Yeah.
Jeez.
This wouldn't have happened under the LNP. Palmer wouldn't have let this happen. That's for sure.
God, no. He loves his traditional cut.
No. Calling it the traditional cut just shows how much of a partisan actor you are in this whole situation. You're a traitor. Cut? You're a class traitor. And I won't have it.
All right.
No.
I don't remember how we got there, but where were we?
We'll just up to the end of the film. So they rock up at the church and Ben Affleck's flying around, just picking people up and dropping them from the sky, killing them. Matt Damon's character's there.
He's drunk then.
He's drunk because his wings have been cut off. He's human and he's drunk. That's correct, yes. And his thing is like, they haven't gone through the arch yet. He actually doesn't like any of this plan anymore. He wants to bail, but Affleck's not letting him bail. Affleck comes down, kills Matt Damon. So he's dead and in hell, I guess.
Presumably, yeah. He's sinned a lot.
He got shitload. Just in this film.
Just a handful of times.
So they put the party splits and Bethany goes to try and find where she thinks God's now located to get him, or sorry, her out.
She has the epiphany that John Doe is God.
Yep. While they're distracting him, Jay cuts off Ben Affleck's wings, which turns him into a human, which they say is a bad thing because now he can die. And they make it sound like Jay has...
No, he has to go through the arch as a human.
Yes.
Because angels can't be forgiven.
But he could have just cut his own wings off, which was the premise. Like, it's an angel cuts their wings off to become human. So I'm sure he could have cut them off himself. But also, now that he's human, shouldn't they just kill him? Just strangle him or something?
Yeah. Well, they try to shoot him, but Jay used up all the bullets firing at him that cut his wings off.
I know, but like, it's America. Just go down to your local elementary school.
Just reach into any glove box.
If there's a church right there, guys. If I've learned anything from playing Diablo over the years, it's the church crypts are filled with weapons. So Bethany goes and she finds God and kills him. So to release the spirit, I guess, from the body. In doing so, she gets shot in the gut and bleeds out and dies.
Yeah.
Because she had to be a martyr for this, which I think honestly is a bit extra.
Shot with lightning or electricity as God is leaving this body.
Yeah, but then there's that line later on in Metatron saying that's the thing about being a martyr. You have to die to be one.
Yeah.
Which I once again think is like, it felt like her dying to do this was, like I would have cut that.
Eh, whatever.
She's dead for about 2 minutes.
It's completely meaningless because it's not a real threat. It's not a real stake. It's not even addressed in the film that it's going to happen.
Exactly. It wasn't like it was a prophecy that she was working against or anything like that.
And it's not her overcoming it, you know, her fear of death or something in order to do it. No, she just does it.
Yeah.
It's not an issue. I'm with you on that one.
So anyway, God's brought back out. It's Alanis Morissette. She's the cutest thing in the fucking world. She speaks to Affleck with her horrible God voice and blows his head off, which is... great in so many ways, mainly because of Jay's rant after he gets up and sees this random woman sitting there. And
he's remorseful at that point when he's confronting God or confronted by God. He's remorseful of what he's done.
Oh,
And he kind of welcomes his own, you know, undoing at that point.
But just Jay's reaction. That's great.
What the fuck happened to that guy's head?
Why were you hugging my-
So angry. Then Saint Bob rocks up. He's holding dead Bethany. God brings her back. Bethany, thank you. And in doing so,
she should have come back as... You know, like Rufus came back as an apostle, that should have been her. That no, I'm in heaven now, guys. You know, that's my deal. But no, she's brought back to life and is pregnant.
And then Metatron makes it sound like you're pregnant, and there's your daughter's going to have a lot of stuff to do coming up. So it makes it sound like there's another movie coming, which of course there never was. Not a complaint, but he does make it seem like there's a reason that you have this child. Like it's important.
It's fine. It's a fine ending. I think it could have been better, but it's fine.
God does a sick handstand and falls over. Really good shit. And everyone says thanks and leaves. And that's pretty much it. Unless there was no coda to this film, I don't think. Does it just end there or do they go after there? Does this film have like a denouement anywhere?
I don't think so. I think that's it.
Yeah. Like after the main story ends, like where are they now sort of thing? Like or does it go...
Like a post-credit thing?
Not even a post-credit thing. Just like after they leave the church, does it come back to... their lives like normal. I can't remember what it was. I don't think it did.
There is like a comic book that links Dogma and Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back together.
Fucking great stuff.
But other than that, no.
Oh,
it's
guess
like the same universe though, isn't it?
Yeah.
The Viewerskewerverse.
There's like 10 films in those, or roughly, thereabouts.
Like that.
I'm not sure if Tusk fits in. I think it does.
No, that's its own thing.
Because this Tusk is linked to Yoga Hoses.
Yeah. So that's like its own little universe. But
weren't they linked to Jansol Bob's reboot? That's why, which is obviously connected.
Well, actually, yeah, I guess so. Because like those characters are there, but also, like, those Canada movies are technically their own little thing, but obviously they must take place in the same universe.
Yeah. Either way, there's a heap of them. And it's, yeah, I mean, it's if you know them, it's cool. If you don't, like I said, I saw Dogma first, and I had no troubles at all with Jansel and Bob rocking up. Yeah. It's funnier, like, literally, as I was, because I had watched them in the reverse order. I did Jansel and Bob Strike Back and then Dogma. And I was sitting down watching Dogma, and my wife was briefly there watching it. And the second freaking Metatron was like, "And you're going to meet two prophets," I just started laughing out loud like a dickhead. I'm like, oh, that's fucking right. Oh. Like, I went in knowing that they were in it, but just the fact that, like, there's these two prophets you'll meet, one that talks forever. I'm like, oh, yeah. This is going to suck for you. And do you guys want to go to verdicts then, or any other scenes in particular you want to highlight?
No, I think exactly. My favorite scene in the whole movie is the one in the boardroom that we talked about before. Mm. That's so good. And then just throughout the movie, just Jay is just so good.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. Andrew?
No, I kind of like the whole theology of it.
Mm.
I really like films that explore, you know, I like courtroom films. So anything that is about technicalities and loopholes and, you know, no, this is exactly, you know, you have to follow the logic here, but this is how we do it. I love films that take the time to explore that. And so the whole premise of the film
is... Have you watched that Trial of the Chicago 7 movie?
No.
I just saw it pop up the other day. It's got like a pretty big cast and it's like a courtroom movie.
Okay.
I've been meaning to watch it, so I figured I might flag it with you.
All right.
And Doze, before I hit the verdicts button, anything you
want? Yeah, no, I like the... No.
No, you don't have to. You don't have anything to say. It's fine.
I do. That's the thing. It's just everyone laughs at me when I try to talk. So
you're a very funny guy.
Thanks.
I'm going to push the button now.
Oh, no. So like Andrew was saying, the theology of it, and I like the line in the movie when someone says the Catholic mythology or the Christian mythology. Yeah. And I'm like, that's more how I see this, because it is playing off the theology, but it is more mythology. Mm-hmm. Because if there were angels from the Bible, everyone would be dead because they can't speak to humans without them exploding. So
yeah. I also, if I could saw this,
it's fun.
Great little comic strip that was like, I can't remember how the joke was set up, but effectively it was, oh, my girlfriend's such an angel, but she's like an accurate biblically referenced angel. He looks over at her, she's got like fire around her and like 17 eyes and like seven mouths or some bullshit. And I was like, yeah, nice. Yeah. All right, I'm going to hit the verdict button. Let's do it.
You've heard the good, you've heard the bad, a lot of opinions, a couple facts, it's verdict time.
Big old I'd recommend for me. I love this film. I was worried going in, having not seen it for like 5 years or so, that it wouldn't hold up still, but it really does. And I think, purely from a visual standpoint, there's one CGI shot in the entire film, and that's the fucking Ben Affleck angel flying down. Yeah. It's not great, don't get me wrong. It was a cheap movie back then, and it was back then. But but visually, because it was relying so heavily on practical effects, it looks great.
Mm-hmm.
It's still very funny. It doesn't, as much as it is making fun of certain things, it's not done so in a way that would, I can see as being insulting to people. Like, I'm not religious at all, so for me it's all funny anyway. But even if I was, I couldn't see myself getting offended, because it's not making fun of anyone.
Yeah.
It's just using it as a story crux, which is why I'm amazed to hear that about all these fucking protests that happened. Like, if you'd watched the film, you'd be like, oh, thank you. Red State's the one you want to complain about.
Mm. Because the people who protest these things, they hadn't even seen it. It's not a question of content. It's just, how dare you make a film about Catholicism?
Well, there's a great bit like with one of the protests where like Kevin just went and like hung out with the protesters and he wound up on TV, like on the news. He's just like, so have you seen the movie? And he's just like, no, but I'm told it's very, very bad.
And this is a different conversation, probably one for off mic, but it's the same people that'd be like, oh, those fucking touchy Muslims getting offended that we draw a picture of Muhammad. Mm. Oh, how dare you make a movie about an angel? Like,
yeah,
shut the fuck up. Yeah. Anyway, but no, this movie's great. I love it.
As do I. It's well cast. Everybody does their job beautifully. There are no holes in the film, I think, at all. Even the little thing at the end where Bethany's a martyr and that's kind of inconsequential. And whatever, you just kind of brush that off and think. The film is just wonderful at carrying through its story and its themes of, you know, sacrifice and, you know, loyalty and what those things mean and how they manifest themselves when you actually, you know, put some real stakes, you know, when you threaten that the whole world's existence, how are people going to react to it? I like it. I've always liked this film. I watch it regularly every couple of years or so. I get it out, and it's a high recommend.
Absolutely. Yeah, same here. It's definitely one that I go back to quite often. It's it probably is like a bit of a barrier for some people that it is a part of like a series with so many other movies, but it's also relatively inconsequential to those movies. So like you don't need all this, you know, you don't have to have seen like three previous movies to understand it. Like, you know, you might enjoy like Jay and Silent Bob a bit more if you've seen some of the previous movies, but you really don't need it. And it's like, yeah, like you guys said, it's great. Like so well put together, so funny, great premise. Everyone's performances are great. It's, yeah, like we said, I think we said it maybe off mic, but like it's definitely one of like Kevin's best films. Yeah. I think it's held up very well.
Yeah, 100%. Like I probably don't watch this as much as I would like to, but yeah, I do go back to it. And I love watching it. It's a good amount of funny and like not too serious, but also having a good through line, with well thought out like bits that all tie in together. That makes sense, you know, like the little bits with the halos and on the angels and the Ken doll. yeah, it's funny and yeah, I think Kevin Smith, it's probably one of his best.
I think he nailed it with this one.
Yeah,
yeah, definitely.
Sweet. So we'll be back next week with Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back,
ugh,
and then the week after with Jay and Silent Bob's Reboot. So, yeah, buckle in, guys. It's hard to tell. I only recently watched Reboot. I could watch it again for the review, but I watched it maybe like a month ago. I can't tell if it was, like, top of my head, if it was better or worse. It's definitely better made than Strikes Back, but because this film's just, pure knack of he's just making more films. Like, they do get better in production. Yeah. Story-wise, though, I can't remember enough about it, but honestly, this next one's pretty stupid, so I can only say it's going to be better by default. Yeah.
Find us on Instagram at Second Take Podcast, or if you live in the future, you can tweet us at Second Take TNC.
You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Second Take. You can also follow me on Twitter, if you like, at JordanMSPP.
Which one do you normally do?
I have no idea.
Cool. I'll just, that's fine. You can follow me at Bastion_James. Our website, secondtakepodcast.com. Our Patreon, we're going to throw this one to you halfway through, Doe. So it's patreon.com/secondtake. Yes. Nope.
just secondtake.com.
What? No. Okay, abort. Yeah, that's. I think that's it.
How dare you abort? Pro-choice.
Yeah, I'm making a choice.
I've made my choice. That's the professionally.
Yeah, that's the
anyway. Your joke. What?
Thanks.
All right. Bye.
For you.
Good luck.
Second Take Podcast is recorded within the Moreton Bay region of Queensland, Australia, and acknowledges this region's original owners, namely the Jinnabara, Cubby Cubby, and Yugara people. Second Take Podcast respectfully acknowledges the traditional custodians of these lands, and we pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging, for they hold the memories, the traditions, the cultures and hopes of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.